Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Head Over Feet by Whitney Dineen, narrated by Devon Sorvery and Wayne Mitchell. Chapter 1. Queen Charlotte, 22 years ago. It's an unwritten but well-understood rule that when your mother uses your full name, including your last name, you are in trouble. This is no different when you're the child of royalty. Queen Charlotte of Malqoire didn't need to put her hands on her hips to show her disapproval to her middle daughter, but she does it anyway. Aubrey Margot Eloise Hale, please come here. Two middle names meant serious business. With her soft brown hair pulling loose from its ponytail, the young princess scrunches her face into a scowl. If I come now, Grady is going to get away. She looks down at her older brother's friend, who was sprawled out on the ground beneath her straddled legs. That is no excuse for a young lady, a princess no less, to be sitting on anyone. Get up and come here. Aubrey, or Bree as she was known when not on the verge of a royal reprimand, grudgingly rises to her feet. With her fists balled into a fighter pose, she tells Grady, "You're lucky my mom showed up, or I'd be letting you have it right now." "You'd be letting me have it?" Grady rolls his eyes and snorts. "The only reason I'm not sitting on you instead is because my mother would make me scrub the stables with my toothbrush if I stood up to you." "Psh, crybaby." Bree jumps up and runs full force in the other direction before he can respond. Arriving in front of her mother, she demands, "What?" "Excuse me." The queen cocks an eyebrow in reproach. "The proper thing for you to do is to ask me what I would like in a pleasant, if not reverent, manner." Bree drops into an instant curtsy. "I'm sorry, Mama. It's just that awful Grady Bassett makes me so mad." Brushing a smudge from her daughter's cheek, Charlotte asks, "Why is that, dear? Grady is such a lovely boy." "You're only saying that because he's nice to you, which he has to be because his father is father's secretary. But he's not nice to me." "You don't suppose that has anything to do with your always hanging around him and Alistair, do you?" "Al is my brother. Why shouldn't I hang around him?" "Dear." Charlotte bends over, so she's on eye level with her daughter. "Boys don't generally like to have their little sisters around when they're playing with their friends. Why don't you come with me, and we'll ring for tea? I think we should spend some time practicing your manners." Looking longingly over her shoulder, Bree takes her mother's hand and lets herself be guided in the direction of the palace, the last place she wants to be. Princess Aubrey, present day. Rifling through a stack of invitations on my desk, I finally pick up the one I've been searching for. "Agnes, please tell my mother I will be accepting the invitation for the Countess's garden party on Sunday, but I won't be able to attend the Edelins' supper that evening. Oh, and let her know I'll be joining them tonight," as per her nagging. "Yes, ma'am." I'm certain Agnes won't share the bit about the Queen being a nag, but it feels good to say it nonetheless. "You make me feel like your grandmother when you call me ma'am. I'm only a year older than you."
"Yes, miss.
Agnes is very formal, as one might expect of an employee of the royal house. She's also quite beautiful. Her stunning facial features, large blue eyes, slim aquiline nose, and full pouty lips are only partially responsible for that blonde goddess vibe of hers. She could probably be strutting her stuff down a Parisian catwalk if she chose to. What she's doing as my assistant is anybody's guess. I hope you don't think I'm being bold, I say, wondering if I should keep my nose out of her business. The problem is, I'll never have the answers to my questions if I don't dig. You seem like an unlikely person to be a personal assistant." She stares at me blankly. I like working for your family. Yes, but what did you study in school? Most of my family have secretaries in their late 40s and older. They're all unexceptional and bland, except for Agnes. I received my degree in business management, she says, while crossing one slender leg over the other. Her shiny, bone-straight hair is carelessly pushed back behind her ears. How does she get it so perfect? I make a mental note to ask her what conditioner she uses. I plan to run my own high-end employment agency one day. Working for the royal family of Malqar is a great credential to have on my resume. I suppose it is, I say, for lack of anything else coming to mind, other than her hair care routine. Did you grow up around here? I always try to learn as much about my staff as possible. As this is Agnes's first week, every day has been a one-sided game of 20 questions. I did. In fact, my neighbor's dad worked for the king. Really? My ringing phone interrupts us. It's my brother Alistair's fiance. Lou, hello. Are we still on for lunch today? Before she can answer, Agnes collects a stack of papers from my desk and stands up. As she walks out of the room, I tell my soon-to-be sister-in-law, my new secretary is dauntingly gorgeous. Says the most beautiful woman in 100-hectare radius. While I appreciate your saying so, I tell her, you haven't met Agnes. Also, kudos for using the metric system. You're practically a native now. Lou is from the States, as is her sister Claire, who is marrying my brother Jeffrey. Agnes? That's kind of an old lady name, isn't it? It's a pretty common name in this part of Europe. Are we still on for lunch? We are, but I'm hoping you might be able to come to my place. Beatrice's piano teacher had to reschedule for today, and I want to be around to discuss my daughter's lack of progress. Lou came to Malqar for the festivities surrounding the announcement of her sister's engagement to my brother. While she was here, she not only fell in love with Alistair, but she also fell in love with an orphan at Shepherd's Home Orphanage. She's currently in the process of adopting Beatrice while planning her own wedding. That makes two royal weddings in the works, with my brothers marrying a pair of American sisters. Quick, someone call the Hallmark Channel. In lieu of voicing my snark, I tell her, I'll happily come to your house for lunch. I want to give my new niece a great big hug. Can I bring anything? Just your appetite. Alistair will be here as well. Is that okay? Lou and Al have practically shared an umbilical cord since declaring their love for each other. It's disgustingly sweet. And if I weren't so sad about my own abysmal social life, I'd be a much better sport about it. Probably. As long as the two of you can keep your hands off each other while we eat. Ha ha, your prince is out there. Remember, I'm 6 years older than you. Lou, if I have to wait 6 years before this dry spell ends, I'm going to rip my hair out. What about Grady? Her voice lowers slightly, like she's trying not to be overheard. What about him? My palms smack against my desk before I stand up and start pacing around my office. I thought there might be feelings between the two of you. Feelings? I practically shout. If you mean loathing and annoyance, then yes, there are feelings. But believe me, those aren't the kind of feelings I'm in the market for. You once told me you had a crush on Grady when you were kids. Her tone is positively smug. I used to like cheap chocolate too, Lou, but I grew up. I still like cheap chocolate, and I think you still like Grady. I'm starting to reconsider our lunch plans. I don't really want to spend the afternoon talking about the captain of the royal yacht. Tripping over the corner of my oriental rug, I perform a spastic little dance and barely catch myself before falling into a shelf of books. You do remember that he recently picked me up and tossed me over the side of the boat, don't you? About that. I should hang up now before she finishes her thought, but I don't. Alistair's account of the incident is that you wouldn't leave Grady and his date alone. He said Grady had to do something to settle you down. First of all, I practically shout, what is the captain of the yacht doing entertaining women at his place of employment? Before she can answer, I add, he should have been fired for that alone. Alistair gave him permission. I love Lou like she's my own sister, and while I'm not surprised she's taking my brother's word over mine, it still smarts. Whatever. I'll be over at 12, and please let's be done talking about Grady Bassett. She doesn't agree or disagree. All she says is, see you soon. Then she hangs up. It must be nice being secure in a relationship, knowing your future is set. While I'm from a generation that doesn't consider a romantic relationship the ultimate sign of success, I'm also from a royal family. My life is not, nor has it ever been, my own. As a public princess, I support the crown in any way that I can. This means I go to luncheons and teas, I sponsor charities and raise money for all kinds of worthy causes, and I attend one boring ribbon-cutting after another. While performing these duties, I would like to have something that's just mine. At 30 years of age, I've decided that something is a mate. Unfortunately, all the men who have shown a romantic interest in me seem to be more interested in my station and what it can do for them. A note to all young girls who dream of being a princess. Be careful what you wish for. It's not all it's cracked up to be. Chapter 2. Jacqueline, 20 years ago. Did you and Alistair have fun today, dear? Jacqueline Bassett calls out as her son runs through the entry hall past the drawing room. No. He keeps going until his gallop fades into the distance. Picking up the phone on the side table, Jacqueline dials a 3-digit number she uses often. Hello, my friend. How are you? Queen Charlotte answers. Did Alistair and Grady get into trouble today? My son was less than forthcoming when asked about his day. Grady is always a delight. I generally don't even see the boys. They're so busy roaming the grounds. But you saw him today, Jacqueline prods. I did. Humming softly, the queen adds, Aubrey was being a pest and bothering the boys again. I don't know what I'm going to do with that girl. She just wants to feel like a big kid. Don't be too hard on her. Poor Grady isn't going to have a moment's peace until that daughter of mine finds herself a hobby or another boy to adore. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon. Jacqueline chuckles softly. Grady will survive. Wouldn't it be wonderful if those two wound up together someday? The queen says. That will never happen, Charlotte. George has drummed it into Grady's head that while he plays with the young royals, he is not a prince, and he should never consider himself their equal. What a load! I was the daughter of a flower shop owner, and now I'm the queen. Surely the son of the king's secretary has a higher standing than that. Jacqueline gently blows on her tea. My husband is not so open-minded. He's the 6th Bassett to hold the title of royal secretary, and believe me, hierarchy has been drummed into his brain since before he could walk. We'll have to disabuse him of that notion, should feelings ever develop between the children when they're grown, or, should I say, should Grady ever return Bree's adoration. It would be wonderful if that happened. I mean, here we are, lifelong friends. It would be delightful to share grandchildren together someday.
Grady, present day. Your sister is going to kill me, I grumble while pacing the length of the ancient en passant carpeting in Alistair's library. What did she do now? She went out for an evening cruise with your parents last night and made sure to tell them once again that I should be fired. Of course, I was within earshot. How did my parents respond? Alistair's grin is so wide he looks like the Cheshire Cat. I'm so happy my misery entertains them. Your father told Bree that if she was being as much of a pest as she was when she was a tot, he would have thrown her overboard too. Stopping in front of my friend's stately Alexandre Chevry desk, I grasp the roots of my hair like I'm trying to remove them from my scalp. I did that nearly 6 months ago, and only because she wouldn't leave me alone. When is she going to get over it? I'm sorry, have you met my sister? Alistair laughs sardonically. She's loved you since she first laid eyes on you. She's hardly going to let it slide that you tossed her overboard her own yacht while romancing another woman. I can assure you that Bree has no romantic feelings for me now, and as romance isn't an option, the only thing I can think to do is to quit.
You would resign a royal commission just to get away from my sister? That seems extreme.
What would you have me do, Alistair? If I continue working for your family, I'm going to keep running into her, and believe me, no good can come from that.
So ask her out. Have you forgotten you recently confessed that you'd like to kiss Bree again?
He raises one eyebrow in a quizzical manner. Have you forgotten that I told you I will never do that?
Because you don't think you're good enough for her? Don't be ridiculous. She's the fifth child. She could marry the gardener if she wanted to.
Ouch. I plop back down onto a worn brown leather wingback. You flatter me. Sarcasm oozes out of my mouth. If Bree and I dated and it didn't work, how could I keep my job? It would be awkward to the extreme.
And if you dated and it did work?
He prompts. Then I would be working for my girlfriend and her family. That's equally problematic.
Plenty of men work for their girlfriend's fathers.
Alistair pushes his chair back and kicks his feet up onto his desk. Perhaps if her father were a banker or a businessman, it's a totally different matter when said father is the king of my country. Alistair shakes his head and looks at his watch. Come on, we need to get going. I told Lou I'd be there early. Deciding a change of subject is in order, I declare. I'm delighted you found your future princess. No one deserves it as much as you do. Standing up, Alistair reaches out and pats me on the shoulder.
You're one of the few who never believed the Playboy image the press perpetrated on me. Is it any wonder you're the best friend I've ever had?
Rising to my feet, I tell him, no one man could have ever lived up to that image. Unless, of course, we're talking about Hugh Hefner in his heyday. And even then, you're not a creepy old pervert. Leading the way toward the doorway, Alistair sighs.
I'm lucky Lou took the time to get to know the real me. Things weren't looking too good at the start.
You're worth the effort. Alistair's friendship has been a staple in my life since we were both in knee breeches. He's been as close to me as a brother.
Darn right I am. You are too. Someday, some fabulous woman is going to sweep you off your feet and make an honest man out of you.
He nudges me in the ribs.
Even if it isn't my sister.
Please, let's stop talking about Bree. I would like to enjoy a peaceful lunch with you and Lou without being in a perpetual state of annoyance. Alistair leads the way out of his house. His is the third of four cottages, aka mansions, that lie in a row on the grounds. They are all reserved for the royal children. Andrew keeps quarters in the palace because he's the heir. As the oldest daughter, his sister Sophie stays there as well. Jeffrey and Claire will live in one of the houses once they're married. They're currently back in Oregon packing up their homes. Shuri and her wife Brigitte live in Paris but have use of another of the homes when they visit with their young daughter. Alistair and Bree reside in the other two. They're right next door to each other. While walking to our cars, I glance over and notice Bree's SUV parked in front of her place. I release a breath I didn't realize I was holding. If she's home, I don't have to worry about running into her anywhere, which is about the best thing I could hope to have happen today. As much as I am attracted to my friend's sister, nothing can ever come of it, so it's much easier when we don't have to see each other. Since today is my day off, that means there's no chance of running into her on the boat. It's going to be a good day. Hopping into my car, I tell Alistair, I'm going to stop in town on the way and pick up some flowers for Lutece. I'll only be about 10 minutes behind you. Sounds good, my friend. He gets into his Aston Martin and pulls out before me. I take a moment to turn on my playlist and enjoy the opening strains of Vintage in Excess. Cranking up the volume, the pounding bass of Need You Tonight reverberates through the sound system. As always, a feeling of pure contentment washes over me. Now, if that will just last.
Chapter 3. Queen Charlotte. Life is good. Two sons married in the same year. Anticipation shoots through Charlotte as she hurries to her closet and decides that the lilac-colored wrap dress will be perfect. One must look the part when interviewing wedding planners. What an exciting time for not only Geoffrey and Claire, but Alistair and Lou as well. Charlotte texts her friend Sharon, who's possibly the only other person on the face of this earth who shares her feelings. After all, she is mother to both brides. Charlotte, I wish you could be here to help me pick a wedding planner. Sharon, me too, hon, but Tootie's on the road and I promised I'd stay with her. We're working out a new song that she wants to sing on the final stop of this tour. Charlotte, I cannot imagine having as much talent as the two of you. I asked my friend Jacqueline to take your place. She's a real stickler for details. Sharon, brilliant. I'm sure everything will be perfect. I need to turn off the lights and grab a little shut-eye. Talk to you soon. Charlotte, you know you will. Walking down the grand staircase, the queen arrives in the front hall at the same time her friend Jacqueline is ushered through the main entrance. Charlotte, you look like a breath of spring. You look gorgeous yourself. The queen reaches out to hug her friend. Not everyone can wear yellow. It makes my complexion look like something in a baby's nappy. I look like death warmed over in lilac, Jacqueline commiserates. It deepens my dark circles, and I look like I haven't slept in months. Charlotte takes her friend's arm and leads her toward the salon while calling over her shoulder, Sims, please show the wedding planners in as they arrive. We'll take our tea right away. The butler nods and bows while the queen adds quietly, If only we were planning a wedding together for Bree and Grady. Shaking her shoulder-length bob, Jacqueline responds, I think we both know that's never going to happen. Never is a long time, my friend. While it appears those two can barely stand each other, we must remind ourselves that love and hate are a very short distance apart. Aubrey. Lou, you look stunning. I hug my future sister-in-law, admiring her red silk blouse and skirt. Not every ginger can pull off that look. You can wear any color you want if you're audacious enough. Lou is nothing if not audacious. It's a trait I find quite admirable. Taking off my jacket, I fold it over my arm. Where's Beatrice? She's having her piano lesson. I'd take you in so you can hear, but if I did that, then she'd want to skip her lesson entirely. If she doesn't enjoy it, why make her do it? I ask. I want to give her a fully rounded education. I don't need her to play Lincoln Center or Carnegie Hall, but I'd like her to have an appreciation for the finer things in life. She'll automatically get that being raised by you and Alistair. But at 5, she might not be ready for anything other than a beginning ballet course. I read somewhere that it's easier for kids who can read music to learn how to read. I thought it would give her a leg up, Lou says as she leads the way into the living room. I didn't learn how to read until I was 9, I confess. My parents were worried I was dyslexic or something. You're not, are you? Lou gestures for me to sit next to her. No, I just wasn't ready. But once I started, there was no stopping me. I don't mention that I dreamed of becoming a writer. That's not something that goes hand in hand with royal life. I looked around the room, decorated in feminine antiques. Alistair inherited this house from a great aunt of ours, and he gave it to Lou as an engagement present. There's talk he might move in after the wedding. I hope that isn't the case, as I love having him next door to me. Where is my brother, anyway? He's in the kitchen putting lunch together. Oh no, we're not having grilled bacon and peanut butter sandwiches, are we? That's Alistair's specialty, and as far as I know, the only thing he knows how to cook. Lou releases a trill of laughter. He's tossing a salad I put together earlier and popping open a bottle of champagne. No peanut butter that I know of. Champagne? What are we celebrating? She shrugs slightly. We'll tell you at lunch. I jump to my feet. Let's go eat, then. I skipped breakfast and I'm starving. Looking at her watch, she says, We're waiting for one more person. Her eyes dart excitedly to the front window. Oh, look! He's arrived! As she gets up to welcome another guest, one I didn't know was coming, I pull the window shear to the side and watch as none other than Grady Bassett strolls up the front path. He's carrying a bouquet of yellow tulips. What in the world is he doing here? I'm torn between running out the back door and confronting the man who's been a thorn in my side since, well, forever. Leaving would be the nicest thing I could do for everyone, but suddenly I'm not feeling very generous. I stride toward the entryway like a general marching onto a battlefield. My shoulders are squared, and my jaw is sticking out so far it leaves the living room well ahead of the rest of me. Lou yanks the front door open. Grady, we're so glad you could make it. He's about to hand her the flowers when he sees me. What are you doing here? His tone suggests that he's as happy to see me as I am to see him. Why am I here? I put my hands on my hips in fury. What are you doing here? I was invited. He dismisses me and turns to Lou, offering her the bouquet. I was invited, too. Then I tell my soon-to-be sister-in-law, You didn't mention that Grady would be here. Why is that? Before she can answer, Alistair comes out of the back room. He immediately takes in the scene, but doesn't seem eager to explain himself. I should have known this was his doing. Grady, Bree, we're so glad you could join us. Yes, well, I'm thinking about leaving, I blurt out. Please, let me do the honors. Grady turns and is nearly out the door when my brother says, Children, is there any chance you two can act like adults long enough to enjoy lunch? There is a perfectly sound reason we asked you both here. It has to do with this petty feud you have going on. Petty feud? I sputter. The man picked me up and threw me off a boat. Off a boat! That's not petty, that's... Words escape me. Barbaric? Contemptuous? Illegal? Apparently, words don't escape me after all. It's the only sensible thing to do when you're being harassed by an annoying child who refuses to grow up. He has no right to be mad at me. I'm the injured party here. I square off and face him, my hands firmly on my hips. I'm sorry, Grady. I'm not, and nothing in my tone suggests I am. Are you or are you not the ship's captain? Before he can answer, I tell him, You shouldn't be entertaining women on my family's boat while you're on duty. I had your brother's permission. I did not need yours. His face turns an unnatural shade of red. Instead of commenting, I abruptly turn toward my brother. Let's get this over with. I have a million things I'd rather be doing than wasting my time here. Like tending to a den of vipers. I was not raised to be so rude, but Grady Bassett brings it out in me. Lou leads the way into the dining room. I follow begrudgingly, wishing custom and courtesy didn't dictate that I walk in front of Grady. I can't stick my tongue out at him when I'm in front of him. Once we're all seated and the champagne is poured, Lou raises her glass. Alistair and I were hoping the two...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?